Welcome to the ENC Wedding Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Bertling. I really appreciate you being here to listen as we discuss tips to help you plan your wedding. I'm sure you will find our topics beneficial to you and your planning process. In our podcast, we'll have wedding professionals, brides, grooms, and others participating in discussions that will assist you in your planning. And it is my hope to help you reduce your stress level as well. Welcome to the ENC Wedding Talk Podcast. I'm so glad that you're here again today. I hope that you have been getting some great information from our podcast. And today we have Mark Rohrig and then also Lee of Lee Anthony Styles Wedding Officiant. Hello.
Hi, Jennifer. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how are you, man? Looking great. Great. Got it in anyway.
We are rolling today, and we're going to talk to Lee about the twists and turns in his life and how he got started in the wedding industry. And Lee, tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to meet the pastor and his family.
So I was raised in Beaufort, North Carolina, about 45 minutes outside of New Bern. And I grew up in a great household, both parents present. Dad was a very hardworking man. My mother, she was an early childhood educator early on in my life. But at the age of 16, I was always an AB honor roll student, had a promising future. But at the age of 16, I just started hanging out with the wrong crowd. I felt like I wanted more out of my life than just going to college and being a good student. I wanted to get into the party scene. And in return, I got involved in drugs. Not only did I start smoking marijuana at 16, I started selling marijuana at 16. Mm-hmm. By the age of 19, I was selling cocaine and got my first felony cocaine charge by 2001. And that kind of turned into a life of crime and being in and out of incarceration for about a good 10 years, I want to say. And then in 2007, I got shot 7 times at point blank range.
Wait,
by two
how
guns.
How many times?
7 times.
7 times. Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still an unsolved case. I'm very at peace with that situation because I'm just thankful that God saved my life. I had to relearn how to walk again, went through multiple blood transfusions. My doctor said that I was blessed where I didn't have to wear a colostomy bag for the rest of my life because it was a chance that that could happen. They had to repair my bowel. My right shoulder severely got my arm partially came out of the arm came out of the socket, and my right shoulder was completely damaged. They said I wouldn't never shoot a basketball again, and I've been playing basketball now for about a good 15 years. So I just thank God that He saved my life on that fateful night on June 7, 2007. Yeah. And wow. You would think after a situation like that, Jennifer, Mark, that I would change my life, and especially having a near-death experience like that.
You would think it's
time for me to change my life, but I did the opposite. I went right back to the streets, went back to selling drugs.
Did you find that was just like the easy way to go, or you just kind of fell back into it, or... You know, did you make the choice? Like, okay, this is for me. This is the way I want to do things.
Right. What was it that pulled you back in?
Two things. It was my mindset. I was immature at the time. So I felt like living the street life was the way to go. I couldn't see better for myself. And I think a lot of people that get trapped off in that lifestyle, that's what happens. They feel like this is the only way I can live, especially once you get a criminal record. You feel like you can't get a good job or you can't have a good life because you got felonies on your record. And I might as well continue to commit crimes because, yeah. I mean, nobody's going to know good. No employer is going to want to hire me. Yeah. So I had that type of mindset. And also I was a product of my environment. The influences I had in my life at the time, they had a big impact on my life. I was influenced by the people I was hanging around. Mm-hmm. A lot of negative voices in my head. And in return, I stayed in the streets. But God has a way of removing you from distractions and putting you in timeout, so to speak. That's why I like to call it. He put me in timeout when he allowed me to go to prison. I went to prison because of the choices I made.
Yeah. And how long did you have this particular time? Because you said you were in and out, but this time that changed your life, how long were you incarcerated for?
Well, I went to prison twice. The first time I went for 2 years. Mm-hmm. The second time I went for a year and a half. And it was the second time where I made my spiritual conversion.
Right. Okay. Right. Did somebody, was there something there that, or a person that was there that helped you make that transition? Did you come to it on your own accord? Tell us a little bit about that.
I came to it on my own accord. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a person. Once I made a conversion, I had people that, you know, they would read the Bible with me and we would study together and go to church services together and things like that. But it happened on my own accord because of the personal things that I was going through at the time. I was suffering from depression because I took myself off of antidepressants at the time. And I just felt like I wanted to see if I could cope without having an antidepressant medication. And at that time, I thought it was a huge mistake because they didn't wean me off of the medication.
Yeah.
They took me off cold turkey, and that was very dangerous. I could have had seizures.
Right.
And I could have had suicide thoughts. But I ended up on suicide watch, though, because I was having severe panic attacks all throughout the night. I didn't get good rest at all. And I was waking up in the middle of the night when I did get to rest and lay down. I was waking up in the middle of the night having panic attacks. And the psychologist, she just thought I was losing my mind, which was crazy to me at the time because I'm like, I'm in my right mind. I just feel like I need to get back on this medication because I feel like I got a chemical imbalance in my brain. Mm-hmm. Well, they refused to put me back on and they ended up putting me on suicide watch. So I was on suicide watch for like 3 days, just laying in the 6x9 cell naked for 3 days straight.
Oh my goodness. And so, So you pretty much got detoxed from it after that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, when I first got to prison that second time, I was just telling you guys about, I was abusing Xanax on the street. Mm-hmm. I didn't even have a prescription for Xanax. I was just buying it illegally off the street. Mm-hmm. And I was using it every day, drinking alcohol every day. So when I went to prison, I had one of the worst withdrawals you can ever go through from benzodiazepines. And I literally didn't sleep for 2 weeks. By the grace of God, I didn't have a seizure or anything. Mm-hmm. And that was the worst time period of my life mentally anyway, because I was in a really dark place. Jennifer and Mark, I really feel like my life was going to end. It was like this dark cloud was hovering over me during that time period.
And then what changed? What was that moment, that aha moment?
What changed for me was I was just laying there on my bunk one day in prison and I'm suffering. I'm going through these panic attacks. I'm super depressed. I didn't want to go to the chow hall to get food. I was losing weight because I wasn't eating. I was in a state of dark depression. And I said, you know what, God, you know, I had a relationship with you when I was younger because my grandmother used to take me to church and everything. I used to go to vacation Bible school. But I felt like as I got older, I kind of lost my way and I don't have that close relationship with you anymore. Prove yourself to be real to me. And I'm going to dedicate my life to you. I'm going to go to church and give your way a shot this time, because every time I try to do it my way, this is where I end up just falling into this deep pit. Mm-hmm. And I started going to church. And one night, the pastor at New Hanover Correctional Center, he was preaching on the prodigal son, how the prodigal son ran away from his dad's home, took his inheritance from his father.
Right.
And then he just started partying and he ended up broke and he found himself in the pig pens feeding the hogs. And that's when he came to his senses and realized even the lowest of my father's servants eat better and they live better than this. So let me go back and repent and go back to my father's home and tell my dad I'm sorry. And his father welcomed him back with open arms and threw him a party. But when the preacher was preaching that, I felt like I was that prodigal son. Mm-hmm. I felt like that was God telling me that, son, you ran away from home and you made some bad decisions, some bad choices in life. And look, this is where it has landed you. And at that point, I said, you know what, God, I'm coming back home and I just want to live for you. So if you allow me to be released from prison, if I don't die in here, I'm going to just dedicate my whole life to you.
Very good. That's very powerful.
Yeah.
And so obviously you turned a different way in that you wanted this positive life for yourself. And so what were some of the things that you did when you got out of prison to just kind of head in that right direction?
A lot of people were telling me that I had a powerful testimony. I gave my testimony for the first time in prison. It really felt good to tell my story, to talk about how I got shot and God saved my life. Well, I had a lot of different people, a lot of pastors invite me to come to their churches to give my testimonial. And I remember I started working a job 3 months after I got out. I was only getting paid minimum wage, $7.25 an hour. But I felt honored to even be working a legit job because it had been so long because I had sold drugs for years. I felt honored to work for $7.25 an hour because I worked for 40 cents a day in prison picking up trash alongside of the highways. Right. So I started going to these different churches, giving my testimonial. And I just felt like God was, and people were telling me, God is calling you to do more than give a testimony. He's really calling you to preach and to minister.
Right.
I couldn't
right.
see it at the time, but I said, in whatever capacity God wants to use me in, then I'm yours, God. I'll just let you use me and I'll be obedient. And I got into ministry February 2015. I was serving at my cousin's ministry and her and her husband's ministry in Fuquay Verena. I was there 2 years and I heard God say, hey, the need is back in Carter County where you stay. There's a lot of people dying from drug overdoses. There's a lot of people on drugs, a lot of people that are bound by other things. Your ministry, the ministry I'm going to build inside of you, is going to help people overcome their addictions, and it's going to help them get out of a pit and help them get out of a rough place. And it's going to allow them to experience true freedom in me. And that's how I came up with the name From the Pit to the Palace, because it embodies my story of how I was in a pit and God took me out of that pit and he placed me in his beautiful palace. And that's where I reside now. And on that, the first night of that event that I did, that God gave me the vision for, it was December 12th, 2017. And over 250 people came out to that event. It was on the front page of the paper. Several people gave their testimonials. We had praise and worship music, but it was one of the few events that anybody around here in this area experienced where you had law enforcement under one roof with present drug addicts, former drug addicts. You had clergy there, ministry people, the media was there. All these different people from different walks of life were under one roof, and it was all for one purpose, and that's just giving glory to God and celebrating people's sobriety and celebrating their recovery, which I've been living in recovery for 12 years now. I've been clean from drugs. I don't even drink alcohol. I don't judge anybody that does, but I just feel like I need to stay away from drinking because I know what it can do in my life and it can turn into an addiction. Well, unbeknownst to me at that event, it was a pastor there. His name is Pastor Manly Rose, and him and his daughter came to attend the event because of his daughter's past struggles of drug use and addiction. So he reached out to me about a week after the event. He said, hey, Mr. Styles, I was at your event. It was very powerful. We're doing recovery meetings out to my church in Harkers Island, Refuge Fellowship Church, and we would love for you to come out. One day we would like for you to give your testimonial, but we want you just to come out and attend the meetings first to experience them and just see what they're about. And Harkers Island is a predominantly white community. And it's just people, it's a myth about that the Downey's community that not too many African-American people go down there and everything. Well, I just heard a guy say, look, I told Pastor Manley I would come out to his church, to the recovery meetings and visit. And I went out there on January 1st, 2018, and I went by myself. I heard God say, go by yourself. And I remember walking in the door, and everybody was just like staring at me like, wow, look at this black man walking through the door. Yeah, because you know, it's very rare that you're going to see black people down there in that community. But I went to school with a lot of people down there, and I always been cool with a lot of people down there. I never had any really bad experiences down there. So I felt comfortable going, and the rest is history. Me and Pastor Manley Rose built this relationship. We did a second event where we had him speak. We had him introduce his daughter. She gave her testimonial. It was on Good Friday, 2018, March 30th, 2018. And then God gave me the vision of Duty Setter Revivals, community revivals. And he told me to reach out to Pastor Manley and ask Pastor Manley Rose if you could do the revivals at his church. And I did. And Pastor Manley agreed. He didn't say I got to pray about it first or anything like that. He said, brother, let's do it. And those revivals were very, very influential in our community. It was a historic set of revivals because you had different races and nationalities and ethnicities coming together for one common purpose. And that is to praise God and to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And many people got saved and dedicated their lives to God because of those revivals. And that started a beautiful friendship and brotherhood between Pastor Manley and I. And several months after the revival ended, one day him and his wife reached out to me and they said, hey, Corinna, and that's their daughter that had the struggles with addiction, said Corinna and her fiance Jerome are about to get married. We would be honored if you officiate the wedding. And I said, officiate a wedding? Like, I've never officiated a wedding before. I mean, I just started ministering. I had been ministering for a couple of years. I just started really preaching sermons. Like, I never officiated a wedding. I don't have that type of experience. I would love to get that experience under my belt first. And they were like, well, you won't get that experience unless you do it first. So right. I was like, yeah, right. You're right. And Pastor Manley wanted to walk his daughter down the aisle, and they wanted me to perform the first part of the ceremony. And then I just handed it over to him for the second part. And that's what we did. And that happened on November 2018. Well, because I got such a big social media following, I posted the pictures and the media from that wedding on my Facebook page. After that, I had a lot of different couples reaching out to me saying, Lee, we want you to officiate our wedding. Yeah. And I'm like, oh man, like that was the first one I did. I don't really have too much experience doing these weddings and everything. But I started officiating more weddings. I remember I did a couple of co-workers of mine's weddings when I was working at Longhorn Steakhouse. Those went really well and everything. And then I knew Amanda Clevenger. Me and Amanda had known each other for a while because we were running in the same ministry circles and everything. And I knew she had just started doing weddings and stuff, and she had more experience than me. So when I met Amanda, she kind of helped harness my officiant business by like telling me her process of how she have couples fill out registration form online. She go over the wedding script with them personally, just so she can kind of channel their vision with the wedding. And I just started doing that as well. And before long, my wedding officiant business took off. And I even told myself, Jennifer and Mark, that this year I got to do my sister's wedding on May the 30th. Coming up on Memorial.
That's wonderful.
Yep. The Tuesday after Memorial Day, I'm officiating my sister Kimberly's wedding in Greensboro. Her and her fiance are about to get married. And I officiated a wedding in January for a couple of friends of mine. And I told myself, those are the only two I'm going to do in 2023 because I have so many other things I need to focus on. But do you know, like just this week alone, I got invited to officiate a wedding in July. It's another one that they asked me to officiate theirs in 2024. And they've just been ringing in. And I just take it as a compliment. People really respect me as a minister, as a man of God, and as a person and individual where right. they trust me with a special day, because this is a day that's only going to happen for them one time if they stay married, if they don't get a divorce. So for a couple to entrust you with their special day and they trust that you're going to minister words of love, hope and inspiration to them on their special day, to me, that's a really big deal, and it really motivates me, and I just feel honored to be in this position.
You know, Lee, it's the connection that you make with people. It is. And, mm-hmm. we go back and listening to how, you know, you just kind of blew up on social media, right? You connected with people, and, you know, hopelessness knows no color, right?
Sure. That's right.
Yeah. And now you're even talking about, you know, the message behind the wedding service that you perform. It's hope is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hope. It's inspiring. And I was just reading a book last night where the author of the book was talking about pain having a face. But he also said that joy has a face, too. And when I see the joy on the faces of these couples that I marry, it really brings joy to my face. Because there's been a couple of times where I had some personal things going on in my life and I felt down. And I go in and I officiate a wedding and I'm putting a smile on my face. And I'm like, man, this couple, they're in bliss right now. But internally, I'm in a different place. Like, I got some things going on in my life. And I go and I officiate that wedding and just change my whole mood. Emotionally, it takes me to a better place.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what? I needed to officiate that wedding, not just for the couple, but the couple don't even know that me officiating their wedding actually helped me out a lot. It inspires me and it gives me motivation to continue to do what I'm doing. And also to one day have that type of love in my life where I'm walking down the aisle and I'm just going to stand there with my best man and officiant. And I'm anticipating that day of watching my bride walk down the aisle. So to be able to encapsulate that for other people, it inspires me that one day it'll happen for me too.
That's right. And people have probably heard a smile is contagious. Well, so is joy. I know when I'm around people who are joyous and you can just feel that energy and just feel the love at a wedding, at groups that are getting together, those are the things that are going to bring you up. And I'm so glad that, Lee, that you have found that direction for joy and happiness and that this door has opened for you. And, you know, Kelsey Autry, who is a makeup artist in the area, she's going to be on one of our future podcasts, but she was sharing with me, Lee, that she used you as an officiant and that she really loved the fact that you got to know them as a couple. And, I just really loved that. Can you explain why you do that and how that benefits the couple and also the ceremony?
I feel like when you get to know the couple and on an intimate level and you get to know them personally, and if you become friends with them, you're a better officiant because you're able to minister and to help them exchange vows in an intimate way because you got to know them on a personal level versus you don't know anything about this couple. And I've had that before too, where I officiated weddings where I didn't really know much about a couple. And to me, those weddings didn't go as great as Kelsey and her husband Jonathan's wedding or some of the other ones where I got to know them personally. Because when you get to know them on a personal level and they tell you about their story, they tell you about their love story and how their love came into fruition and how that love has grown, then I feel a certain type of connection with them. It's like I'm becoming one with them and their story. And I just love writing. And I look at myself as being a great storyteller. So one of the first things I ask the bride and groom to do is to email me your love story. Email me your love story. How did you meet? Do you remember the first day you fell in love? How did that feel? Really get really detailed with the feelings and the emotions of what it feels like to be in love. And once I hear those stories, it's like God gave me a gift for putting it on paper. And once I put it on paper, it becomes another story. It's like their own personal love story within a script. And I tailor it to their liking because I want the script to be everything they wanted to be and everything. And I actually got a cool story. So I'm one of those open-minded ministers. Mm-hmm. So I believe 100% in the Bible and everything. I know God is real. But I had one couple, and they were from, I think, Wallace. I had to go to their out in Wallace and officiate their wedding. They reached out to me. And they were one of the coolest couples that I ever officiated for. But the groom, he told me, he said, hey, let's keep God out of the script. Let's keep God out of it. And I said, okay, that's fine. And I debated for a while and everything. I'm like, should I be performing this wedding? They don't even want God like in the script. And I just felt like God wanted me to do it anyway, because you never know what can happen. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So showed up to the venue about an hour early. I actually beat the groom and everybody else to the venue. Me and my friend, we were the first two people there, and did a wedding. And everybody was just so nice and so loving. And do you know that one of the groomsmen after the wedding, he said, man, I see God in you. And me and my wife are going through some problems right now. She didn't come out on this trip with me because we've been arguing and fighting and we're on the brink of divorce. Can you please pray for me? And I prayed for him after the ceremony was over, and gave him my phone number. And I got his number. We exchanged numbers. And he actually contacted me a couple months after that wedding ceremony. And he said, do you know that your prayers work? Me and my wife have reconciled. And we decided to stick it down and really make this marriage work. And I was just like, wow, you know, because if I hadn't have went to that wedding, if I would have told that couple, look, I'm not going to do your wedding because I cannot do a script that doesn't have God in it. Mm-hmm. I would have never had an opportunity to pray with that individual and to be able to minister to him. So that's why I always tell people, be open-minded, stick to your beliefs, but don't never shut the door on people because they believe differently than you, because you never know how God will still get the glory out of that situation.
That's right. I mean, everybody's individual and they have different levels of beliefs, and, you know, maybe non-believers, believers at different levels. So that just having you there was very important to this man. And I'm sure, you know, like you said, now you can feel it too, that you were meant to be there that day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you were talking a little bit about ceremonies and making it personal. Is there anything that you've done that's maybe a little unusual or a trend that you might be seeing? Anything that's come up recently?
One of the trends that I've been seeing is social media is a big part of our individual lives. Excuse me. And I feel like now what I'm seeing from wedding couples is they want to incorporate social media more. So you're seeing a lot of wedding videos on TikTok, mm-hmm. where brides and grooms are going on their TikTok accounts and they're channeling that whole wedding experience on TikTok. And it's become real popular too. I see more and more brides on TikTok and allowing people to share their experience by posting this 60-second or 90-second video on TikTok. And so I'm seeing that more. And I'm seeing more like individual ceremonies taking place. And a lot of them are very, very unique. I mean, you have your traditional ceremonies within the wedding ceremony, like tying the knot ceremony, the three-core strand, which represents God and the couple coming together, all three as one. And you have a lot of people that have, they want to do a tequila ceremony where they want to take a shot in the middle of the wedding. I did even though I don't personally drink, but just like I said, I'm open-minded. I did a wedding for one of my old coworkers and his wife, and they wanted to do a tequila shot ceremony within the wedding ceremony. And they did that. And I thought it was really cool. So those are some of the cool trends that are mm-hmm. going on now. Yeah. I did one out in Goldsboro where they wanted to do, it was like the bride, the groom, and the mother of the bride and the mother of the groom all came together, and they kind of did like a four-chord strand, well, a five-chord strand where it was them four and the fifth chord represented God. I thought that was really cool too, to have the two mothers come up and with the bride and the groom and do that. So those are some of the trends that are going on right now.
Yeah. The TikTok trend, I experienced that for the first time last year. And I thought, what is this? All of a sudden, the bridesmaids, and it wasn't a very big group of girls, but they had a dance already set and ready to go, choreographed, and they literally recorded it right then and there, and of course posted it immediately, and they looked like they had just a blast doing it. So now I'm hearing from Lee, well, apparently that's pretty popular.
Oh, yeah. So. And in fact, now people are hiring people to be content creators during their wedding so that they don't have to stop and do the videos themselves. They're hiring somebody to do this on top of the videographer and photographer. This content creator is doing videos. They're taking pictures. They're creating TikTok videos.
Yeah. Yes. Lee, that's how you have to branch out now. You know, add that to your officiating. Say, hey, you know what? I'm going to bring an extra person. They're going to like follow you around and create all of these. I could see Amanda actually being very good at that. Wouldn't you agree, Lee?
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure.
Well, Lee, I think, you know, this is a Wedding Talk podcast, but I think your testimony is so powerful, and I hope that it reaches people because they might be in the same situation as you. And hopefully they can take that and head in that direction of joy and positiveness and... You know, is there anything else that you would like to say to somebody that's maybe struggling with addiction or down that road of crime?
I would like to say never give up, and you got to want better for yourself. There's so much more to life than using drugs and getting caught up in that lifestyle. I would have never been able to experience this side of life if I had never changed my life. I would never be officiating weddings. I wouldn't be a minister. I wouldn't be preaching. I wouldn't be doing all this other stuff that I do too. Like I do youth prevention work. I do reentry work. I do work with addiction recovery. You name it. And I got multiple degrees now. None of that stuff would have came into fruition if I hadn't changed my life.
Right.
So if you feel like you're going down a dark road, or if you're on a dark road right now, you don't see no way out. Yeah. Just know there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it starts with you making that decision that you want to change your life. And that's the first step, knowing that, hey, I'm not in a good place right now. I made some mistakes, but it's not too late to get it right.
That's right. Well, I think that is wonderful advice. Thank you, Lee, for coming, and Mark also for sharing in this. And to our listeners, thank you. I hope that our wedding podcasts are very powerful to you and help you so that you're not stressed and so that you can live a joyful life. I'd also like to thank PS Productions for hosting this ENC Wedding Talk podcast. PS Productions has proudly served our Eastern North Carolina community with quality photography, video, audio productions, lighting, and sound rentals for over 16 years. If you would like to ask questions or have a topic you'd like us to discuss, please email us at encweddingtalkshow@gmail.com. I'm Jennifer Bertling, and I thank you for your time and being with us. Until next time, take care.